Good evening. James McKenna here with my Science Hour. It is March 7th, 2013. And I better talk fast tonight because there's a lot of material to cover. Just briefly, my webpage got trounced this week. And you have to understand, I've been at this game, if you might call it that. First of all, I want to preface this by saying I just want to do my science work. I want to study comets. I want to do my observations. I want to present my material. But I'm confronted constantly with this barrage of, garbage from the government-controlled science world, let's put it that way. And that government, remember, is controlled, very much controlled, and especially science, by as I said last week, let's put it right on the line exactly who it is. It's the Jewish European banking community, the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers in this country, and the little peon nobodies that work for them, like the Bushes and the Clintons and the people that are out there, just really got to make a name for themselves because their little egos need to get stroked every day. That's the thing we're dealing with. But science is at the core of all of this. And I've explained this, so I'm not going to go into detail. But as for me, I just want to do my science, do my radio show, present my material, and educate you, the public. But this week, the point of this is this week, my webpage was hacked. And I mean, it was like a professional hack job. It was like a bank job by professionals. We've gotten it restored, but you have to understand how I work. I scheduled my book release for Wednesday yesterday, and the release did not happen, not because my page got hacked, but because I intentionally moved it to next Monday. But the hackers were in there looking for my book, and I knew they would be there. They really want their little grubby paws on my book, my new book. And they're a bit worried about it because, and I guess they should have a reason to worry about it. But they didn't get it. They brought down my sales page. They brought down all of the links to the other ebooks. They went in and they destroyed the links to my Calculate Prime subpage. And of course, I'm a computer, I would say not the smartest computer guy in the world, but I've been around the block with computing. And of course, we had backups, very recent backups to all of this. So it took us about a day to restore and bring it back together. But a lot of work, a lot of diversion. But they didn't get my new book, which they were after. They were in there digging all over the place trying to find that new book, and they didn't get it because, very simply, it wasn't there. So, like I say, I play this game of cat and mouse because that's the way it's got to be. I want you to listen to last week's lecture radio show if you missed it, because I go into not all the details, but quite a few details of my previous book releases. So I really, really want you to listen to last week's show. It's archived on my webpage, like all the other radio shows for the past dozen years. But anyway, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time. Just wanted to let people know that this is the level of activity. The YouTube videos that are impersonating me, saying that I'm claiming the end of the world is nigh, there's something moving into the solar system, and that was from my 2004 radio show and other shows, not just that one. So they went in, chopped a bunch of radio shows, hooked them together, then put a February 17th date on it and posted it on YouTube. Now, the follow-up, YouTube has refused to bring these down, where they're clearly imposters put up there using my voice from chopped radio shows. YouTube has refused to take them down. Additionally, by the way, YouTube is now owned by Google, which is owned by the CIA, which is the police force of the New World Order. So the boys are out there in force trying to ruin my good name. Additionally, YouTube will not allow people, my fans and who are going to the YouTube videos, not allowing them to post links to my webpage. They've been edited out of the comments. So they're little busy little beavers out there, just trying to make sure that nobody gets to my webpage to find out what YouTube has done. Okay, then I just want to remind you, about a month ago, it was spaceweather.com that started a trap for me, and I didn't bite it on the issue of multiple moons around the comet C2012-S1, which I'm still investigating, and I had my own data, but at any rate, they got caught putting out that information and then tried to accuse me of doing it. So they are after me. By the way, we found out that spaceweather.com, which is looks like a subsidiary of weather.com, is owned by the Rothschilds. Well, gee, now what is the European banking community doing owning the weather.com, one of the major sources of information, which, by the way, is fed through many other sources to give weather information in screened format. So the Rothschilds own the weather, now the weather reporting. So that just gives you an idea of how they want to control this information getting to the public. And, of course, the heart of the real information on weather is my weather book, The Principia Meteorologia, The Physics of Sun-Earth Weather, which is, by the way, in the five-book e-book package, and you can buy it individually. Also, it's still available in hardcover on my webpage. And all of this, by the way, only available on my webpage. So the Amazon.com, which is another greedy little piece of you-know-what out there, I don't trust Amazon as far as I can spit. They post the fake Colbrand. They were the only place on the internet that didn't pull down the fake Colbrand that the crud from California pretending they wrote the Colbrand. What a joke. Okay, so I'm not going to waste my show talking about this. I've already lost about 7 minutes. But this just shows you, number one, the success that I'm having in reaching the public. Number two, that they are afraid of this information. They are afraid of my new book, and they ought to be. They ought to be because it's the thing that's going to bring down these clowns on a worldwide scale, on a worldwide scale. I want to make sure that you understand that and they understand that because their little outreach people have to listen to me every week so they can report in as to what I'm doing. But the point is, we're hitting at issues that are core to their power structure. When comets come into the solar system or other celestial events happen, it is imperative that the public understand what's going on and not listen to the tier two fairy tale science that you get out of NASA. That's just it in a nutshell. So anyway, I just want to remind you, this weekend is the last weekend for the pre-sale. The book release will occur on Monday, this coming Monday, March 11th, 6 a.m. Central Time, John Moore Radio Show with John Moore, the Liberty Man. And then Monday night, I want to mention that I will be the first hour guest on Coast to Coast AM, also talking about the book. There are other shows coming up in the future. The next Monday, the 18th, I'll be with Joyce Riley on the Power Hour. I'm scheduling other interviews, so just keep posted for those. And I'll be discussing the new book. And, by the way, there is another book coming out. I'll be releasing it in a month or two. I'm spacing them out, but the book that follows the one coming Monday is a very different book, something that will be an excellent addition to my collection of books, and something that I guarantee you will rock the area of study, you might say, that occurs in. So anyway, but the book at hand now, coming out Monday, this Monday morning, And the pre-release sale, by the way, is still going on, will continue through the weekend, and will end when the show starts 6 a.m. Monday morning, which, by the way, the sale is a really good deal. When the new book is released, it will cost $17.95, only available in ebook format. But if you pre-purchase, it's $12. This is only available on my webpage, jmccsci.com. Or if you purchase the entire five-book set, the previous five ebooks that are on my webpage, then you will get the new book for free. And really, that's kind of a no-brainer, because for $65, just the weather book, the Principia Meteorologia, the Physics of Sun, Earth, Weather, just that ebook alone is $35. And a beautiful color, all of the plates are now in color, so even if you purchased these in hardcover, that's all in black and white, you might consider just purchasing the new ebooks, because they're all in color, beautifully illustrated. All of the plates, etc., are in color. For $65, you get the five ebooks. You can download those right away when you order, and then an hour or two before the show Monday, you will get an email to download the new book, the new ebook, prior to the show. After the show, the new ebook will cost $17.95. Okay, so anyway, enough of that. Tonight's main science topic, I will be comparing the great red spot of Jupiter with tornadic cyclonic activity on Earth. And this is something that is a great, great example of a storm system that has existed on Jupiter for as long as we have observed Jupiter, back to Galileo. The first guy to look at Jupiter was the first one to observe the spot. And, of course, up and through the space age, scientists really didn't know what this spot was. They thought maybe it was just a thing on Jupiter. But they get there and take close-up pictures, and here it is, a cyclonic storm that's moving around. Not only that, but there are gaseous belts of air moving in opposite direction around the around Jupiter. Jupiter is a swirling ball of gas, a star, a small unlit star. And its turbulent atmosphere is divided into bands, some of the bands moving westerly, some of them the next band easterly, the next band westerly, the next band easterly. And these are divided, just like Saturn is very similar, Saturn also being a small star. So the point is, how can you relate this down to weather on the surface of the Earth? It's very instructive how this works. In my weather book, I have a picture of the Earth and how the connections, the electrical connections connecting out, they're like if you've ever seen a leech on a fish, I'm sure we've all seen a picture of that where the leech is attached to the fish and the fish moves around and the leech just sticks on that one point. And that's very much like Earth moving through outer space. Earth is spinning, it's spinning around, and it's moving around the sun in its orbit. So it's not quite as active as a fish, but our moon, by the way, causes us to kind of wiggle in our orbit just like a fish, because as the moon is on one side, it pulls us that way. When the moon swings around on the other side, it pulls us back. So it kind of, the Earth is kind of doing a fish-like motion around the sun in its orbit around the sun. But those connections, those electrical connections of plasma from outer space are connected into our upper ionosphere. And that draws the water in, which many times is funneled down into storm systems all the way down to the surface of the Earth. The great red spot of Jupiter is similar. It's a cyclonic storm that started, and by the way, there's many, many little storms like the great red spot on Jupiter. Saturn has many of these cyclonic storms, and they move within the belts of Jupiter. The Earth is very much the same. Now, also in my weather book, and this is something, by the way, all my books are written for the general public. But on Earth, we have three main belts like this, and actually five total belts that move around Earth. And these are ionic and electron currents, literally electrical currents that are spinning around our planet in the upper atmosphere. The equatorial electrical current is made up of electrons, primarily made up of electrons. Around our equatorial belt, the electrons move westerly. That's what draws the storms. That's what powers the hurricanes, the storms that move around the equatorial belt of Earth. They move in a westerly direction. And why do they move in a westerly direction? Once again, this is basic electromagnetic theory if you understand what's happening. There again, standard meteorology cannot explain to you why a hurricane moves to the west. Why on earth would it move to the west? The trade winds at that point are moving mainly in an easterly direction, in the opposite direction. Why would the hurricanes move against the standard movement of the winds many times that are in that area? The trade winds come in from the northwest, but they're not driving those hurricanes. The hurricanes move perpendicular to that and many times move back against it as they swing northward in the mid-Atlantic Ocean. So what in the standard model of warm water causes hurricanes? What causes hurricanes to move along that westerly belt? It's electromagnetic. If you take the electrical current, and this is basic 101 physics, okay, you take the electric current, you take the positive current that's driving that hurricane, and the real answer to the source of energy in a hurricane is it's powered by the electrical currents from the ionosphere. The same source of energy, by the way, Mr. New World Order guys who listen to my show, that's the same source of energy that Tesla was using to drive and collect energy into his Tesla tower and then distribute it to us, the public, for free. And, of course, Westinghouse, part of the New World Order back in the 1900s, because they existed back then, these bankers go way back in ownership. They realized that if some guy over there named Tesla could give the power away for free, and they just bought all this hardware to create electricity out of coal, they weren't going to make much money. And for the next 100 years, they weren't going to make any money. So they had to get rid of Tesla. They went out, they sent the goons out, tore down his Tesla tower, and then created the fabricated story that Tesla was trying to distribute power with his Tesla tower. What a joke. Where was Tesla supposed to get all this power from? He had sold all his equipment to Westinghouse. And, of course, that fairy tale myth has been propagated to the public, just like all the other lies that they have to create. Lies upon lies upon lies upon lies. But they have professional liars all the way down to the Tier 2 scientists that populate NASA, that populate the university, who are just... I got to clarify that the tier 3 scientists who populate the universities and repeat textbooks, they're just stupid. They're not liars, but I don't know what's worse, somebody stupid that doesn't know what's going on, or somebody that knows what's going on and is lying. Take your pick. I don't know which one is worse in your book. But at any rate, neither group are real scientists. The tier 1 scientists fully know that Tesla was collecting power, and they tried to rebuild it after my Atlantis to Tesla book was released. Back was around 2004 when the New York power outage occurred. I explained that on last week's show, the incident surrounding that. But back to the hurricanes, take the right-hand rule, it's called, of electromagnetism. The positive current, the ions that are collected swirling up the hurricane tube, the eye as we call it, swirling up, are moving upwards. So you put your right hand, it's called the right hand rule, you put your thumb, everybody do this. You put your thumb in the direction of the current. So just put your thumb out in front of your right hand thumb with your thumb pointing upwards. That's the electrical current in the right hand rule. Now your first finger points in the direction of the magnetic field. That's north. That's going straight north, straight away from you. Now if you look at your right hand out in front of you, you got your thumb pointed up. You got your first finger, called your pointer finger, pointed directly out in front of you, away from you. Now wrap your middle finger out, perpendicular to these two, and your middle finger is going to be pointed left, in the left direction. So here's the configuration of your hand. Your other two fingers are kind of wrapped in towards your hand. Your thumb, this is your right hand, it's out in front of you. The thumb is pointed up. Your pointer finger is pointed away from you, and your middle finger is pointed out to the left. That forms a coordinate system of three axes. The thumb pointing up is the electric current. The finger pointing away from you is the magnetic field, and your middle finger pointing to the left is the force. That's the electromagnetic force of a current passing through a magnetic field. The force is to the left. That's what drives the hurricanes west. West, my young man, go west. Hurricane, go west. Why? Because it's electromagnetic. That's the pure and simple reason why hurricanes and tropical storms move west. Electromagnetic. It's driven by electromagnetic currents from the ionosphere. Okay, so what is going on Jupiter? You have the exact same situation. You have the Jupiter magnetic field pointing north. You have the storm rotating there with the current coming up, and you have the force forcing it west. The same situation on Jupiter. Now, the other two bands of electromagnetic current in our atmosphere move in the easterly direction. But they don't follow this nice straight path that the electron current around the equator follows. Remember that the electron current around the equator moves west. It couples with positive current movement in the high latitudes and in the low latitudes south of the equator and north of the equator. Those currents move east, and they're kind of snaking motions. They swing up sometimes all the way to the Arctic Circle. Sometimes they swing down way, way down, and sometimes as far as Cuba, or about 17, 15 degrees north latitude. So they have that much variability. And as they swing up and then wrap back down, those are the high cell centers. As they wrap down and then swing back upwards, those are the low cell centers. These highs and lows move around with the jet stream. But what causes the jet stream to be there, the upper layer jet stream that drives our tropospheric weather? Well, if you listen to standard science, they give you some more fairy tale science. They want you to believe that the sunlight comes in into our atmosphere. It's the only source of energy that they recognize. That energy somehow organizes itself up into the jet stream and makes it move around. Now, absolutely backwards science. Backwards. Exactly backwards, which is the case with most science. For example, lightning. Standard science would like you to believe that this cloud is tumultuous because of energy that comes from solar light. And somehow it magically organizes itself into these thunderstorm systems. And when these crash together, it causes lightning. But they also got other little problems. How does lightning shoot out the top and the bottom of this alleged battery that they claim is forming from the random motion of winds and currents and updrafts, etc., in a thunderstorm? Well, it's more fairy tale science, because there's no battery in the universe which is going to shoot electricity out the poles, because the easiest place for that current to move is within the battery itself, to try and discharge the battery. So if you took, let's take your 1.5 volt flashlight battery on the counter. Okay, you take your flashlight battery, hold it in your hand. What is the probability or the possibility that that is going to discharge from one side of the battery to the other side of the battery just all by itself? And the answer is it isn't. You need a wire. You have to put a wire there, folks. It's called a current path. And so the battery of itself, now let's go up, we'll do a thought experiment, something that the Germans used to call the Gedanken experiments. You take a battery, let's say 10 million volts. This is a big, powerful battery, 10 million volt battery. And now what's the possibility that that battery, it's got two poles just like your little flashlight battery, a positive and then a negative pole. What's the possibility that our 1.5 million volt battery is going to shoot electricity out of both sides of those electrical terminals? Zero. Zero possibility. It'll never happen because the easiest path for that current to pass is within the battery, and batteries do have a very high resistance. But there's a trickle current. If you just leave a battery uncharged, just sitting there for a long period of time, any battery will discharge because it has what you call a trickle current within the battery, and that battery is trying to discharge itself, but it's got material in there that is a very poor conductor. That's one of the aspects of the chemistry of a battery. It's a very poor conductor. So the electric charge that is being harbored there does not move within the battery, but it never in a zillion years is going to come shooting out the other side of the both sides of the battery. It ain't going to happen, Mr. Tier 2 fairy tale scientist at NASA. Okay. The point is that the electricity that comes to us through thunderstorms, through hurricanes, through tornadoes, which are highly electrical, all comes from a source outside of our atmosphere, which is the sun. Okay, so the point is that the electricity that we see above a thunderstorm system and between the thunderstorm bottom of the clouds and Earth is part of a much bigger electrical current path. Okay? And this is what causes lightning. We see lightning in all of the powerful storm systems. And as I said before, if you take the fairy tale Tier 2 science that somehow this forms from sunlight in a big tornadic system, say with 70 tornadoes running across the plains of Oklahoma, that would be more energy than arrives from the sun in probably a week or two. And they're expecting you to believe that in an afternoon, 7 to 10 times the amount of energy that's coming in terms of solar light all of a sudden flips up, organizes itself into 70 tornadoes, and starts marching across the state of Oklahoma, continuing on into Missouri and other states. You know, the fairy tale science out there that the public is expected to believe is just absurd. But why is that? Why is that? You got to dig down deep to find the real answer, because if the public knew that this energy was just flowing down here in boatloads of energy for free and we could tap into that, just imagine that the world bankers, the world energy elite, the people that control that, it's the same bunch of garbage up there, the same people that sent their people to hack my webpage and try and steal my next book and destroy your ability to get that book, the same people don't want you to know this, because if the public wakes up in mass and understands that there's all of this energy available, and like I said, I'm not talking about a box that sits on a table and that somehow magically draws energy in from the universe and you plug a cord into it. No, I'm talking about serious natural levels of power that we can tap into simply by building Tesla towers. At any given time, we can tap into this source from any place in the United States and distribute around the grid. We do not need oil. We do not need nuclear with all its horrible waste and just an absolute pollution nightmare. We don't need coal and we don't need natural gas. We don't need any of those. We never did. We could run our entire world without that. We don't need wars in the Mideast to secure oil resources because we shouldn't be burning oil at all. It burns the oxygen that we breathe. There's less oxygen today than there was 10 years ago. In the atmosphere, nobody's talking about that. None of the green tree hugger scientists out there trying to convince you that there's a greenhouse problem. They're not telling you that this is burning up the oxygen. They're telling you that in 10 to 20 years, some kind of a greenhouse effect, which is another fairy tale science. People don't understand. The greenhouse effect came from Carl Sagan, who was scrambling at the time when they first sent space probes to Venus. These scientists at NASA thought they were going to find dinosaurs on Venus. They get there, and the Russians had already been there. They said, no, this is a hot, hot, hot place, chemically hot, sulfuric acid from the clouds. This is a horrible place. It's hot enough to melt lead on the surface of Venus. NASA didn't believe them. And so when NASA gets there, all of a sudden, Carl Sagan and the boys had to jump up and find a reason for the high heat of Venus. And they said, oh, the greenhouse effect. It has a canopy of carbon dioxide. But immediately it was pointed out that, hey, the dark side of Venus is the same. It's equally as hot. It's as hot as the sunward side. So how do you move the heat from the sunward side around to the dark side when there's no wind on Venus? And, you know, this just began the laundry list of problems with the greenhouse effect. But you know what? It's in every textbook, all the way up to PhD level, that the greenhouse effect is the cause of high heat on Venus. More fairy tale science. But then they said, oh, well, it works on Earth then, and that causes global warming. But wait a minute. If it doesn't work on Venus, that Venus has this immense, 100 times more dense atmosphere than Earth, with thousands of times more carbon dioxide, and how can it work on Earth with our thin little atmosphere and a little poofy layer of carbon monoxide and carbon dioxide on Earth? How could it possibly work here? And the answer is it doesn't. Teams, fleets of government-sponsored scientists have made their living, their entire career, off of bad fairy tale science, trying to convince the public that there is a greenhouse effect, global warming is causing the Earth to heat up, and what's really happening is we are recovering from an encounter with a comet thousands of years ago that drove us into an ice age. We are literally getting back to normal. The North Pole and the South Pole should not have polar caps according to the standard heat model of Earth. We are simply getting back to normal. The melting of the glaciers that formed during that ice age. Now, understand that this is also explained in my weather book. As you come out of an ice age, as we did thousands of years ago, one of the things that the fairy tale tier 2 science tries very hard to ignore, when you're coming out of that, the glaciers, the snow cap, and they tend to reflect in the fact that there's no green or dark absorbing material on the face of the Earth. Most of it is white. It reflects a lot of light, so it takes a long time to start to thaw. But once these glaciers start to thaw and you get a lot of rock around there, the heating process accelerates. It goes exponential, and that's where we are right now. We are simply getting back to Earth normal status, very simply put. But again, The New World Order, the people in charge, tend to use these fairy tale science, this fairy tale science, for their dominion over the public. Now you've got Madonna running around the world singing about greenhouse effect, and we got to stop polluting with carbon monoxide from cars, when it has absolutely nothing to do with it. Yet the people clap and sing along to the songs and think that they're intelligent. Well, that's the problem with, and I am a very green tree hugger myself, but I really don't like the way tree huggers get used very easily. And the real issue here is we should not be burning oil at all. So they can, you see how they can twist the issue. They can allow us to continue using oil and nuclear and coal and natural gas, when the real issue is we shouldn't be using any of that at all. You see how they can cloud those real issues. Also with the greenhouse effect, they're going, oh, we have a water problem on Earth. No, we don't have a water problem. We have boatloads of fresh water. It's just we have a water management problem. It's just like we have an oil management problem. There's plenty of oil. As Chavez, by the way, unfortunately a great leader in the world, Hugo Chavez passed away this past week, a great loss to freedom-loving people in the world, considered as an axis of terror by the Bushes and the New York, who represent the bankers once again. The Hugo Chavez was a guy that took the resources of his country and turned them around and put them into the hands of the poor people. That's why he's considered an axis of evil member. He bucked the system. He went against the grain of the European banks. So at any rate, that's why he was considered an axis of evil. But you see their economy, the people, you look across the border at some of the other countries there in South America. Devastatingly poor, 60% unemployment. The people just squashed into the mud, U.S. military bases going in to some of the other countries. And the rich people getting very fat. You have a basically third world conditions, accordances with the United States for what they call free trade, which drives their population, their poor population, down to nickel an hour wages competing against China. Yeah, that's what you get when you're buddies with the U.S., but Hugo Chavez didn't do that. He knew the routine, and he probably died of cancer at the hands of the CIA. Because he knew what was going on. He was a thorn in their side. But at any rate, back to but this goes back to energy. This goes back to Tesla. This goes back to energy control, controlling the public. Just think of the resources, the monetary resources daily that go into the United States gas tanks of automobiles and to energy for lighting your house, for moving the materials to build your house. Everything costs four times what it should, because the energy cost in the economic equation and all that money goes to one very small group of people, the pigs at the top, who are taking public resources and driving it into the public economy, forcing the public to buy it to exist. Food depends on it. Water depends on it. Everything depends on energy, and we've got pigs at the top feeding at the trough at the expense of everybody else. Gee, what's wrong with that picture? So at any rate, but this all comes back to science. A poorly educated scientific public is an easily manipulated public. Very simply put, and that's what my books do, is they set you free, and that's why they don't want my books in your hands. When they went in and destroyed my webpage this week, which, by the way, is rebuilt and it's there, and we're set up to rebuild it very quickly, expecting them to go in and try and hit it again, go ahead, boys, but this just puts a marker on them they are afraid of what I'm doing because I'm giving out real information and showing the public what the real situation is. And it all comes back to science and engineering. The public has to understand that energy is one of the biggest control factors in the world. Now water is. It's going to be controlled. And who has got their greedy little mitts on that on an international basis? Once again, the same small groups of people. But understand that they need scientists out there scouring the earth, locating resources, giving that data, putting it in forms, collecting their paychecks for their scientific work, and shipping that data up the ladder to the world controllers. Yeah, the scientists are as big a part of this problem as the people in control, because the scientists will sell their soul to the devil, make a paycheck, earn their retirement, and go smiling all the way to their graves, they think. But I got some news for them. When they get on the other side of that wall after they croak, this is going to be somebody else waiting for them. And it won't be such a funny, easy ride at that point. I'm going to switch gears a little bit here and talk about, let me just finish this concept of Jupiter and Earth. The point I want to make is Jupiter is, the red spot on Jupiter is exactly the same type of cyclonic storm system that we see on Earth, a hurricane. It's working the same way and it's connected into outer space. You see that Io, the small moon of Jupiter, the closest moon of Jupiter, of the four major moons, goes around and drives that magnetic field. The other three moons are outside of the magnetosphere, the heavy-duty magnetosphere of Jupiter, but Io is in there and thumping that powerful magnetic field of Jupiter. This is a closed system. It's just like our moon driving our magnetic field through electrical conditions in the solar system. And you look, this is something I pointed out in my early research and was actually discovered by some people. The person that actually I talked to at Cornell, Stan Dermot, I don't know if he's still alive, but a very good conscientious scientist from England, was an independent scientist, very much looked down upon by the NASA arrogant scientists that worked at Cornell when I was there. But Stan Dermot, an intelligent, conscientious scientist, independent at that time, and he's part of his work pointed out that the correlation between moons and magnetic fields, the planets that have moons have magnetic fields. If the moon systems are big like Jupiter, the magnetic field is big. Saturn equally big and organized. Earth has a magnetic field. We have a moon. Mars has a very teeny-weeny magnetic field, albeit it still has one. But Mars has a little magnetic field, but has a moon. Has two little moons, and that's what drives its magnetic field. Venus has no moons, has literally no magnetic field. Mercury has some internal solidified magnetic fields, but it does not have what you'd call a geomagnetic field, etc. I would suspect once we get out to Pluto, it has its moon Charon, it's going to have a form of magnetic field, oddly enough. So at any rate, the magnetic fields related to the moons, the number of moons, and that's an empirical observation. But then you understand that my work explains that those moons are out in the either the radiation belt of the planet, as in the case of Io or Jupiter, or as in the other three moons of Jupiter, or as our moon, for example, is out in the solar wind, a free-moving body, and it charges up. It acts like a comet. The comet tail of our moon has actually been observed, the sodium tail of our moon. Sodium is a common element in the Earth environment. That's why our oceans have a lot of sodium in the oceans. And by the way, one other point that I make in the weather book is, why don't the Great Lakes, why do we have some lakes on Earth that have no salt content? They're basically oceans. This Lake Superior, Lake Michigan, Lake Erie, Lake Ontario, Why don't they have salt in them? Well, because they were under the ice cap that existed for eons of time before the last pole shift, which occurred when Venus the comet came through the solar system many thousands of years ago. Okay, all of a sudden that shifted the pole, that old North Pole shifted into temperate, what we call the Laurentian ice cap, which was not in Siberia at that time at all. Siberia was much more tropical climate, with the mastodons ranging in like a Florida type of climate. But the Laurentian ice cap was literally the North Pole of Earth at that time. And when it melted, it created the Mississippi River Valley. It created the Missoula Washes out in Oregon. All of that melted basically, geologically, in a flash. And those floodwaters carved out vast areas in the northern area of the Mississippi River Valley. All of that area being carved out in a very brief period of time as the Laurentian ice caps melted over time and eventually migrated up to where we see it today. And by the way, the Earth's magnetic North Pole migrating slowly over the years, as much as 50 miles a year, migrating up to the true North Pole, where the true magnetic North Pole, geomagnetic pole of Earth exists. But that migration still going on from thousands of years ago, when the old North Pole of Earth was someplace in the middle of the state or province of Ontario in Canada, just north of the state of Michigan. And by the way, my surveying, when I went to pre-Columbian Americas, I first went down there as a young kid. Instead of going to grad school right away, I went exploring. I went following my nose into the jungles of South America and Central America and Mexico, trying to look at ruins, trying to understand what this world was all about. Many years later, in fact, probably about 10 years ago, so I would say 30 years after my initial visits down there, I went back with good surveying equipment, went into the jungles and started surveying, looking for traces of the old ancient cities down there, and found out that the old cities, for example, Chichen Itza, Uxmal, Tulum, those ancient cities were built on the gridwork of even more ancient cities. It would be like if New York City were totally destroyed by a major catastrophe in 1,000 or 1,500 years later, another society grew eventually out of the ashes and tried to rebuild. But they rebuilt on the same gridwork, the same north, south, east, west gridwork that existed in the city at the time. And so you look at the old gridwork. Chichen Itza is not built on a north, south, east, west gridwork. It's over 13 degrees off. And you go around to these ancient cities and you take what would be the true north of the city. That's the ancient city, and you start to connect these north-south lines. They all join in Ontario. You go around the world to other archaeological sites. The north-south lines of the old cities, the ancient cities, connect into that point in northern Ontario. That was where the old North Pole lay. And so anyway, the point is that Venus the comet came through the solar system, produced a pole shift, and these events are very rare, where a big comet actually interacts with a planet. But we have this event coming up in October, where C-2012-S1 will be coming within 7 million miles of Mars, the planet Mars, and guess what? NASA is not saying a word about that, because they know that there could be some terraforming processes occurring at that time. Isn't it funny? This is beyond hilariously funny. The NASA came out this past week with a series of announcements on a new comet called C-2013-A1, which is going to come very close to Mars. It's not going to hit Mars, according to the best estimates at this time, but it's going to come close. But NASA has all over the internet, all over the front page of newspapers that this comet is coming close to Mars. But they totally ignore, they totally continue to ignore C2012-S1. And when they talk about C2012-S1, the comet coming in from Jupiter that's going to light up the skies next fall, they only talk about next November, a month and a half after this comet will interact directly with Mars. The C2013-A1 comet will not interact with Mars until late in 2014, like October. But they're drumming that up. They want everybody to look over here, but don't look over there at C2012-S1 that's going to come by Mars, and it's going to be a real big comet. And, of course, they're lying about the size of the nuclei of these comets. We could see a real light show. Amateurs should have their equipment trained on this, but NASA is not saying a word, because we're going to see a comet come near a planetary body called Mars, and this has not happened in thousands of years. By that time, C2012-S1 should be very well developed. This will be very visible in the morning sky, starting in mid-September of this coming year, and I'm going to make sure everybody has their binoculars, that they have their telescopes or whatever equipment they have trained on that. This might be a naked eye event where you could actually see with the naked eye this comet interacting electrically with the planet Mars. Mars could even potentially disappear into the coma of this comet as the comet passes by, and as the tail part of the comet enshrouds Mars, we could see terraforming on Mars. We could see the atmosphere of Mars change. We could see electrical discharges. We could see auroras on Mars. All of this potential activity, and NASA isn't saying a word. But they'll tell you about something, a little comet that's going to pass by in 2014. They'll tell you all about that. But they sure don't want you looking at this other one. And when this other one comes through and finally lights up the sky from wall to wall, from end to end, as it's predicted to do, and of course, comets can fail. Comets can fail. They have failed in the past. They've fizzled out. But I don't think that's the case with this one. We'll have to wait and see. It's always a wait and see game with comets, because you never know. We've had big comets in the past that we thought would be big, and they weren't. And by the way, this idea of castigating scientists who predict that a comet will look big and then it turns out to fizzle, that's wrong. That's more arrogant, tier two backbiting within the scientific community, and it has no place in science. If somebody makes a prediction, it's based on the best information they have at the time, and that should be the way it is, because the comet, was it Kohoutek, the one that was supposed to be the major, major comet, and it didn't produce? But big deal. Big deal. Life goes on. Don't start backbiting within the industry, because that's the silliness that goes on in the astronomy community, the type of silliness that goes on. Anyway, I want to turn and talk about the new book. The new book did not release yesterday, and as I said, I had to pull a switcheroo, and as it turned out, the government goons were in there chopping and hacking at my webpage. Man, they dug everywhere under the sun on my webpage and my website to find that book before it was released to you, the public, and they didn't find it, and I had the date moved to Monday, and they're not going to find it. They're not going to find my book before you, the public, get it. That's just the way it's going to be. And so I got to be one step ahead of these yo-yos, because it was absolutely clear to me. I've had experiences with these clowns in the past over previous releases of my books. And this one, for some reason, they're really biting the bit to get. And the reason, I think, because the New World Order idiots up there, the nameless people that sit behind their riches and don't let on to who they are, those people are scared. And they should be, because the comets are the things that the big comets, the great comets, are the ones that really affect the public. And when the public looks up into the sky this coming year and sees these big comets up there, they're going to go, this ain't no little snowball. And all the credibility that NASA has tried to muster, you know, claiming that they went to the moon, the public is just going to go, no, this, they're not going to buy into it. And this is going to lead to a domino effect. It's going to lead to a domino effect on the power structure of the world. More and more people are going to go, you know, there's a history to these comets. I want to know what it is. And they're going to turn to Jim McCanney for answers on a wide, worldwide scale. That's why these people don't want me to succeed. It's not because they care about me. It's because they care about the fact that I'm succeeding. And the public out there is learning. And you know what? When you learn and you see what they're doing, trying to destroy my work that's bringing you the truth, when they see that, and when the public sees that, you know what you do? And I know this for a fact. You go back and you tell your friends, you tell your family. And I know that what happens. You don't succeed. The people look at you like you're kind of crazy. But you know what you're doing? You're planting the seed. You're planting the seed that's going to blossom when those same people look up into the sky and they see that big comet up there and they're going, you know, I want to find out about this comet stuff. And I know that the government is handing me a line of, you know what, and they're going to go out and buy hip boots because they know they're going to have to start wading through all of the garbage out there put out by the government. And ultimately, they will end up on my webpage. So don't be a preacher, just be a teller. Just spread the news and sit back in your armchair and wait, because when these comets blossom into the sky, the public is going to want the truth. And when they do, they're going to end up in my webpage, and the information will get out there. So, and what will that do? That will destroy the con job that's been put on them by the New World Order, the NASA Tier 2 fairy tale science, and the textbook repeaters that teach in our universities and high schools. All of that's going to get washed away in a New York second. Remember to go to my webpage, JMCC, S is in Sam, C is in Charlie, I is in Indigo, www.jmccsci.com, and I will see you all next Monday, John Moore Show, 6 a.m., Central Time, republicbroadcasting.org. It's .org, not .com, .org, republicbroadcasting.org. And for the new book release, and those of you who ordered, will get your email prior to that so you can download the book. This is Jim McCanney. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.